Blog Talk Radio.
Have you ever wondered why it's happening again?
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice, and his wife, Jeannie. Michael and Jeannie share with you the wisdom of the ancient Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. They offer tools and support 5 days a week. They will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love. In Aramaic, Rachma. Michael is the author of Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information on Michael and Jeannie, please visit www.whyagain.com. And now your co-host, the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice.
To the brightness within you and the truth that is rooted within me.
Well, good afternoon. Here's hoping that we're on the air. This is Tim Hayes. I'm a psychologist in Crystal Lake. And this is Mind Shifters Radio, where we're here to support people in using the tools of the ancient Aramaic tool of forgiveness in supporting people if they want to create support groups for people who do this work and to try to make these tools available to every heart, mind, and being on the planet. And I'm checking the chat room does seem to be open. And so today, Michael and Jeannie are in the Bahamas and trying to get on to be able to speak with us. I hope if they're on, they just speak up. And if you call in, the call-in number is 646-200-4169 is the call-in number if you'd like to contribute to the show or if you have questions about the worksheet process or about a support group, or if you have a testimonial to give about the work. The call-in number is 646-200-4169. And since we don't have direct contact with Michael and Jeannie, if you call in and press 1, indicating that you would like to speak, I believe Jeannie is on the switchboard, and she will make you live, so you can just speak up and let us know you're there. And we'll see what we can do to have a productive conversation today about the ways we can reach into our mind-body energy system and remove anything which is less than love. Because we are made of the stuff of love, that's the only energy our system likes and was designed to have, that's the integrative energy, and everything else, any form of hostility or fear, is a disintegrative energy, and once placed in our system, begins to break it down. And if the energetic system is disrupted long enough, it begins to have physical disruption. And then the actual physical tissues, or those things which we interpret as being physical, begin to break down. And this is the source of our disease. And this is the source of our violence. This is the source of what we use to create arguments and conflicts between people. And eventually, we use it to create war. And we are here to invite you to join us in the process of eliminating war on planet Earth. And the way we do that is we use the tool of forgiveness to reach into our mind-body energy system to remove anything which is unlike love. And we do that over and over again until it is not in us to have anger, hatred, vengeance, fear, slander, emotional hurt. And if it isn't in us, it can't come out of us. One of the primary lies on planet Earth is that we are not creators. We have been taught to believe we are not responsible for our own energy system. And it's a lie. And so we are creating our experience every moment of every day by what we choose as the focus for our conscious awareness. Our conscious awareness, our ability to originate mind energy, is a creative force. And we use that creative force all day, every day, to create our experience. Not only that, but we inherit energetically and genetically from our bloodline all kinds of experience, and whenever they get triggered in us, we respond automatically, like a reflex. And unless we increase our awareness of what is stored in our mind-body energy system, unless we're trained to begin to look inward whenever we have any kind of an upset, to undo the conditioning of the culture, which teaches us to look outward at what is the threat and what has hurt us and what has made us sad and what has made us angry. Unless we do that, we remain slaves to our conditioning, and we remain functioning out of reactive, to do an act over and over again which has been done before, reflexively. How do we do that? Well, we go to the website that Dr. Michael Rice has set up and that Jeannie has built at www.whyagain.com. And on the right-hand side, there's a link that says Download Worksheets. You click on that link, go to that web page, and everything you need free, for no fee whatsoever, everything you need is there to download the worksheets, to read the Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again?, which describes the worksheet process, and then a series of four or five audio downloads that are recordings of this internet show where Dr. Michael Rice has stepped through the worksheet process with a variety of different people. So it's a step-by-step model that requires no grand intelligence, no fabulous spiritual growth, and no inordinate amount of courage. It just takes some practice. It takes reading and putting the paper to the pencil, the pencil to the paper, and spelling out for yourself exactly how you're creating the experience you're having in each moment. It may be triggered by outside events, but it is not causing your reaction. And this is a secret to most people because it goes contrary to the way we've been conditioned, at least in the Western culture, at least most everybody on this continent. I tell people that even though I was a psychologist, and I'd been through undergraduate and graduate school training for years, I was probably in my 40s before I grabbed onto two very important systems that talked about how we are not sick, we're not crazy, we're not stupid, we're not lazy, and we don't enjoy pain. And so the things we're doing for good reason. And those reasons are hidden from us in our unconscious, in the things that we've denied and suppressed, in the things that we've been conditioned to believe are being caused by others, and that if we can unravel that part of our mind which is hidden behind the barrier of denial and suppression or behind the curtain of the unconscious, then we can get access to and literally dismantle those things that generate the anger, the fear, the sadness, the guilt, the shame, the blame, the hurt. And that's the point of this work. And we would love to have your questions and comments, and hopefully we're not too far away from Michael and Jeannie joining us on the phone.
Well, actually, Dr. Tim, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Welcome.
Awesome. Okay, I think we maybe have the problem solved. Anyway, we're here on the show with you, and Jeannie's got a couple of callers, and I just have a thought or two I'd like to add to your awesome introduction, and that is that that those things that we generate from within ourselves, when we deny and dissociate from them, the culture tells us that those things made us, you know, somebody made us angry, somebody made us afraid, something caused us to feel something. But just to recognize that our feelings are a reflection of every energy that we hold within us and that's going on inside of us. And nothing can cause anything to happen inside of us, but it certainly can trigger what's there. And when it triggers what's there, we have an opportunity. Actually, we have an opportunity to go in one of two directions. We can go in the direction that you spoke of denial. We can pretend, this isn't mine. You made me angry. You made me sad. You made me afraid. This is the thing that made me. Or I can go in the other direction of actually growing up into responsibility as a creator and say, and this triggered my, and recognize, of course, that it is my sadness, my anger, my fear, whatever it is that's going on. And once I move into the language of responsibility, I then move into a posture where I can start to access the parts of my mind where I have, and the parts of my genetics, where I have created these experiences as a creator, and where now I can be empowered to begin to change them, to shift out of them, and to open the space for a whole different game to occur. And, of course, nobody has ever told us anywhere on the planet, I've never run into anybody when I offer the thought that forgiveness is a tool for removing content from your mind. Nobody on the planet has ever heard that before. It's been, at least not currently, that I've run into. I've never run into anybody that with all the experts on forgiveness that are running around, they're all still talking about, I let you off the hook, because, of course, you made me, which puts all the power outside of us. And, you know, when somebody asks the question, well, how did that make you feel? Well, that didn't make me feel. What made me feel was what was inside of me. And when I realize that I put something inside of me that never belonged there, I start to thank the things that can trigger that feeling that I've dissociated from, because now I can move in that second direction, and that is, instead of blaming somebody else and wanting them to change, I can own that what's going on is what's happening inside of me. And that, recognizing that it's what's happening inside of me, I now have the opportunity to forgive. And the forgiveness is a technology with which you change what's happening inside of you, not a technology for letting other people off the hook. And I call it a technology because it's not just a straightforward ABC process that, like, the culture tells you. And I can remember when I first started to work with forgiveness and started to understand it, and to the people who were talking about it, saying how important it was, I would say, ah, yes, I got it. That's exciting. I hear you loud and clear. And so, how do you do it? How do you do it? And the only answer that I could get anybody to give me was, well, you know, you just forgive. Well, you don't just forgive. You've got to know how the tool works. You can have the most powerful, awesome, fastest car in the world, but you're not going to go 10 feet if you don't have the key and you don't know how it works. And so we're here to support people in learning that tool of forgiveness. And so we're delighted and much appreciative of you, Dr. Tim. And I understand David is with us. How are you, sir?
Doing well, Michael. Glad to hear that you guys are able to be on the show today.
Awesome. I think we've got the technology part of it handled. So we'll know by the time the show is over today whether we've spent many hours fooling with this. And so I think we're in a posture where we finally got it handled. Well, Jeannie tells me we've got a couple of callers. So let's see what our callers have to say. Area code 970. You are on the air. Welcome to the show.
Hey, you guys, it's Carrie in Colorado.
Welcome, Carrie in Colorado.
Thank you. I know you're I'm good. Are you guys having a good time?
We are absolutely enjoying ourselves. Yes, today is our anniversary, our 7th anniversary.
How awesome.
You might not know it, Jeannie and I met on eHarmony.com, the sanest way I haven't ever found to meet someone. We did that 8.5 years ago. And 7 years ago on Memorial Weekend, David was there. We were married. And so when Jeannie's dad came up with this timeshare thing that he had that he couldn't use and said, well, you know, you guys want to use this? Well, the fact that this next week is Jeannie's eternal day and today is our anniversary, we just decided it was time to take some time to go and play. And so we're playing, and at the same time we're editing the Healing Children, Loving Children. We're editing the Kabor's manuscript, the Enlightenment book. We're editing recipes, and I'm working on a new Why Is This Happening to Me again. So it's a play vacation, but we're getting lots accomplished.
Good.
Oh yes. By the way, yesterday we met with some folks who today we're supposed to be meeting with one of the ministers of in the prison system here in the Bahamas, and we may have an opening to go into the prisons and into some of the community centers. They're doing inner city community centers, so we've been talking with folks about connecting in and maybe doing some work while we're here on that in regard too. So it's a vacation, but you know, with the work we're doing, we're never on vacation. No, we're always on vacation. So
that is awesome.
Yes, it is.
Well,
so
I wanted to share. Good. I want to share a couple things, and I have a question I could use some enlightenment on. One is, I just traveled over the weekend to northern New Mexico. I was invited there by a friend who's kind of on a trial basis of living there, but there's a wonderful community there called Hummingbird, and they've been around about 20 years, and they founded themselves on the principles of clear communication, and they're very supported by Barbara Marx Hubbard and some other sort of semi-famous, wonderful people who've been kind of cultural leaders, but really great community. One of the things they haven't included a lot of is body cleansing for more clarity, and I'm hoping that maybe at some point I can share some of that with them. But really neat group of people doing amazing work. Every time they share, they sit down in a circle and each person tells, you know, what's up for them or what's going on, or if they're, and they really work at being very open and clear. And I don't think it's quite as deep as this work is. And so I've been also sharing that with my friend, which is really nice. And I learned driving back, because I gave him a ride back to Denver, which was about a 7-hour drive.
Right.
I learned that I'm now able, after almost a year of doing worksheets, I'm able to walk somebody through a worksheet in my head.
I have the whole thing memorized.
Yeah, and it was really great because I was driving and he wanted to know what the goal canceling process was, because they sort of have a goal canceling process as well.
Oh,
and, yeah, so it was really exciting to realize I've got enough of the worksheet sort of ingrained in me that I can just talk somebody through it in a sharing time and actually remember the whole thing. So that was fun.
Cool.
My question is, kind of jumping to another subject.
Well, I'll tell you what, before you get to your question, you triggered something else in me that I'd like to just share. If somebody wants to watch a really cool film that really has the epitome of forgiveness in it, and I don't know if they knew what they were doing when they did it or not, but one of the what's his name? The Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Harrison Ford.
Harrison's Ford movie, the one with the search for the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
And about 2 minutes from the end of the movie, there's an awesome scene. Of course, the whole film has been about trying to find this Holy Grail, this blessed cup, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, of course, they're in the crisis situation, and his father is with him, his father, who he's been estranged from, which is kind of an interesting metaphor for most people. And his father has been shot by someone, you know, the bad guy kind of thing, and the Grail heals him. And then there's an earthquake, and the Grail falls into this pit, and it's just outside of Harrison Ford's reach. And his father's holding on to his hand, and he's trying to reach it. And there comes a point where he's got a choice. he's either going to let go of his father's hand and go for the grail, which means he falls into the pit and he's doomed. And let's see, what was the actor who played his father? Sean Connery, you know, he's awesome. So Sean Connery's holding onto one hand and he's saying, you know, as he's reaching for this cup that's going to cost him his life if he actually gets it within his grip, Sean Connery, the father who's got one hand, says, "Son, let it go." And, of course, Harrison Ford has to cancel his goal for the grail, turns around and reaches for the hand of the father, which, you know, to me was just an awesome metaphor for the way the whole game is played and really did have the essence of forgiveness of the goal-canceling process just in the last 2 or 3 minutes of the film. It's pretty cool.
Very cool. Yeah, and neat. Because that is an important just piece of, I think, really being able to shed the layers and all of that kind of thing.
Yes. It's where the technology aspect of it lies. If one doesn't know, if one just plays the game of, well, you know, you're told you just forgive, you know, you just forgive, and you don't know the technology piece of canceling the goal, which for those who are listening who may not be familiar with what we're talking about, of course, all that's available on our website under download worksheets. But the canceling of the goal literally allows the mind to collapse whatever it is it's focused on and gives you access to the dissociated part of the mind that's hidden, out of which we've created the trauma and conflict situations that we have. So that's just a short form explanation of it. For a deeper explanation, you can go to the download worksheet section and access more of that. So.
And, you know, I will say I am still, I don't want to say struggling, but I would say that I still wrestle with the whole concept of forgiving the goal because it is so beyond my logical mind. You know, I just do it. I do it every time. I love it. I feel better every time I'm done doing it. And yet I still am trying to fully understand what that means.
Well, can I explain it to you?
Sure, I'd love it.
Okay, cool. So here's let's start with, there's some Harvard research that says that in a time frame where literally there are 10,000 units of electrical activity going on in the brain, 10,000 brain cells firing, the max amount of information that goes into conscious awareness is 9 bits of data. So just a little tiny, tiny framework goes into conscious awareness. Now, when you recognize 10,000 brain cells out of who knows how many quadrillion bits of information or data there are within the mind, something has to tell the mind which data to use. Something has to select or cause the mind to use certain material to drive its perception. So does it make sense that the goal becomes the thing that selects which data or drives the output of the mind? So in computer language, the goal is the driver. Does that make sense? Your reality, the thing you're, you know, I'm upset, they made me really rah. Well, of course, my rah is inside of my tissue structure, my brain showing me a picture, a reality that they made me that. But, of course, I've been through that 87 different times with 42 different people. It's not logical that they made me, though there's something that causes my mind to use that dissociated data to produce a picture of them as cause. And so the goal is the recruiter. The goal is the driver that causes my mind to build its reality a certain way. Does that make
that,
sense?
That makes total sense. Sorry, I was trying to unmute when you asked before.
Oh, okay.
But yes, a light, big light just went out of my brain. The
okay,
goal is
so now
driver,
I load a driver,
yep.
And the driver selects out of billions and trillions of bits of data, 9 bits that it's going to show me as my perception. And obviously, you know, if you've got 100 different people in a room, if you've ever been in a courtroom where 6 different people testified about an accident, you wonder if any 2 were at the same accident. Obviously, their realities are different. Why? Because each of them holds a different driver, a different goal. You know, the person who, for instance, attends the accident and has a prejudice against women drivers swears it was the woman that went through the red light when it was the man. But his mind literally shows him a picture based upon his goal, because he knows, quote unquote, women are lousy drivers. He knows he saw the woman go through the red light, and there was not a woman behind the wheel of that car. That was the other car. So his mind's driver causes his mind to build a certain perception, and in any given situation, everybody has a different perceptual reality, a different picture that is a product of whatever's firing from within their mind. And the cause of the way the mind builds its reality is the driver, the goal. So the Aramaic language forgive is shebag, and it means to cancel. When I recognize my errant perception, blaming you for what's going on inside of me, I am caused to see that by my goal. When I cancel my goal, when I unload the driver from my mind, that false perception has to collapse. Does that make sense?
That makes awesome sense, and I definitely will have to be with it a bit and to really absorb it. But it definitely makes sense. Yep.
So how do I tell if my perceptual mind is telling me a lie? There is built into the system a marker, an indicator that my mind is lying to me, and that is that I experience some form of hostility or fear. I'm totally convinced that what my mind is showing me is the truth because that's what I can see, but hostility and fear tells me that my mind is using corrupt data to build its pictures in the world it sees.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I want to hear your question because I want to make sure we can go.
Well, my question was just, I know I've heard you explain it before, but you've explained how you ended up adding this piece into the work.
Say it again, how what?
How you ended up adding this piece into the work. You didn't have this piece in the early days.
Right, exactly. So now that I realize that I'm in a false picture, my mind's showing me a false picture because my mind is using hostility or fear and I'm using corrupt data, what I need to do is unload that picture. How am I going to do it? I've got to cancel the driver. I've got to remove the driver. When I remove the driver, when I cancel the goal, then my mind's 9-bit output collapses. That's the next step. Does that one make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay. So now that I'm no longer locked into that false perception and I've canceled the goal, I've collapsed that perceptual output. At the same time as I canceled the goal, I opened a direct gateway to the dissociated part of my mind that I've been denying for probably most of my life.
That is so awesome.
So now the dissociated part of my mind that I've been hiding because it was so terrible, it was so painful, whatever, that dissociated part, now that I have access to it, I can bring that dissociated information. A moment ago, when I was building my perception out of that dissociated state, I was sure somebody else, the person I was looking at, was responsible for my dissociated content. They made me, and it's their fault that this is inside of me. So I see what's inside of me, but I'm in an indirect relationship with it. I see it as belonging to you, and I call my mind's lie that my pain belongs to you the truth. So I've got an indirect relationship with my own dissociated content every time that I'm in some form of hostility or fear. When I cancel the goal, I open the keyway to that dissociated part of my mind. Now I'm in direct relationship with it. When I'm in indirect relationship with it, I believe it belongs to whoever I'm looking at, and I have no power over it. I can't change it. I can't change its content. I can't change the thoughts, the feelings, the realities, the behaviors. I can say 1,000 times I want to change them, but I can't change them because they're not mine to change. They're behind a wall, what in the ancient teachings was called the veil of the temple. They're hidden in this dissociated part of my mind. And I can wish and hope and pray and affirm and, you know, all the things I want to do that content's going to change. But as long as I'm in indirect relationship with it, it's not mine to change. The way I get into direct relationship with it is by canceling the goal, collapsing the false picture, coming into direct relationship with the dissociated content. Now I bring the dissociated content to the conscious level, which in the ancient teachings, that 9-bit mind, the conscious mind, was called the alter, A-L-T-E-R. That's where we can alter or change content.
Yeah.
So now that I'm in direct relationship, I can see it directly and go, holy Christmas, this is mine. This is about me. You know, step 6A in the worksheet. I start to see that this isn't about them, it's about me. Now, having understood the mechanics of how the mind works, the only option is to cancel the goal when I'm in hostility or fear, because I realize that I'm in false perception and I'm in need of healing. And when I bring the false data that I've been dissociated from most of my life to conscious awareness, and I've done step 4 of the worksheet, which is to activate love. When love is active and present, and I bring whatever the dissociated pain, now whether that dissociated pain is from something that happened to me 3 years ago, or when I was 3 years of age, or in utero, or happened 3 generations ago, doesn't matter. If I bring it forward to conscious awareness, something that happened to my great-great-grandfather, I may become aware of as I cancel my goal. And when it's exposed to love, I now move into processing that. And processing we define as the ability to keep love conscious, active, and present when something less than love comes up. So when that old dynamic of great-great-granddad comes forward, and love is active in me, my human life, and I ask that super processor, Ruka Dukuja, to be there, I now begin the dissolution of that dissociated part of my mind, and I begin to end my pain, and I begin to end, you know, the part that Tim started the conversation with is we're creators. I now can stop creating out of that dissociated state, and I can start to create consciously in this arena of my life, rather than unconsciously, you know. I mean, who do you know that doesn't say they've been through, you know, 15 relationships and here they are right back with, you know, why are they doing this to me again? Why is this happening to me again? What goes on here? Well, I'm a creator, and as long as I've got a dissociated mind, I can't change my creation. That's why they say the condition of the unconscious or the dissociated mind in the ancient scriptures was called the heart. We couldn't even translate that word till just a few decades ago in the West. But in the ancient Aramaic, they said, take care of the heart. Part of it are the issues in life. They didn't say, take care of the 15th relationship you have, for out of it are the issues, or the 14th, or the 13th, or the 12th, or the 10th. It's out of your own heart. That's where your creatorship lies. And so when you get in touch with what's in that dissociated mind, it changes. You change your creation. And people just automatically show up differently. The game just changes. And, you know, I think Tim pretty much explained it, although I kind of cut in and out of the show yesterday. But when Beth called in yesterday, she was talking about how the trauma in her partner's relationship with her, and that there are 4 things that happen when we decide, instead of living out of the old creation where we've attracted relationships with people who have matching bags of garbage and they like to be able to blame me and I like to be able to blame them, when I no longer blame them and I no longer play as though I'm guilty for what they're blaming me of, then the relationship dynamic has to change. I've dropped the rope, and it has to change. And 1 of 4 things will occur. Number 1, that person will say, hooray, this looks awesome on you and I want some. Number 2, this person will say, you know, this looks really cool on you. I like it. I see you like it. You're benefiting from it. I'm not interested, but I can support you. Number 3, I'm really peeved. I'm going to crank the heat up to put you back in the corner where you belong. And number 4 is, there's no relationship left. I'm out of here. And sadly, oftentimes the point where relationship breaks is the most important point in the healing process, because you have 2 people who have really, truly connected on a deep, connected, loving level, And you'll notice oftentimes the big upheavals come in relationship right after two people have just had the most awesome time of their lives together, where they've hit this new peak, this new high. And in that new peak place, there's a new level of empowerment. And both people lose the ability to hide from themselves as sincerely as they were hiding yesterday. And so when that new peak is hit, the next layer that needs to be dealt with comes up. And sadly, because people live and haven't been taught to be responsible, they live in this blame state. Sadly, the point at which they then point the finger at somebody else, look what you've done to me, and not realizing that what they're feeling is their own. It's not being done to them by anybody else but themselves. Sadly, that's when they turn around and leave, because they're feeling the deepest levels of pain they've ever allowed themselves to be in touch with. This work is about supporting people in getting in touch with the deepest layers of pain that are within them, getting in touch with them consciously, and having a love conscious, active, and present to process through them. And as I say, without awareness, sadly, that's a point where a lot of relationships break. The person who holds unresolved pain, and especially who isn't willing to use the tools, looks at their partner and says, well, I only experience this pain when I'm around you, so it must be your fault. When the truth is, I only experience this pain when I'm around you because you're the person who empowers me most. And the fact that I don't know that this is mine, I don't like being around because I feel pain when I'm around you.
Boy, I have been there.
Yeah, I think maybe a lot of us have learned that lesson personally or directly.
You know, a question comes up as you're telling all this, which is, how do we, you know, I have definitely repeated issues that happened in my childhood as this is how they happened, but I'd like to learn how to state those in a different way that doesn't put blame on anybody. What would you suggest?
Well, my suggestion to you, you know, I know you've got the DVD of communication. Did you hear what I think I said?
Uh-huh.
I'd suggest that you listen to the 7 steps of responsibility communication. Because,
Okay. Again,
the mind, you know, when you recognize this 9-bit mind is just showing us whatever we give it permission to show us, as our goals are usually created by words, so are our realities. So when I say, you made me, I'm calling upon my mind to build me a picture that shows me that you're the cause of what's happening inside of me.
Right.
And my mind has to show me that picture. When I move into responsibility communication, gee, you know, yesterday when you said thus and so, that really brought a lot of sadness or rage or fear up for me. Now my mind is given permission to show me that my sadness or my fear or my rage is mine rather than it must be yours, because my brain is showing me a picture that an hallucination, literally, that you're the cause of what I'm experiencing. Dr. Tim, how's all that fit for you, and do you have any comments, any thoughts?
Well, it fits perfectly, and I think just as, I don't know if you were able to hear it yesterday, but one of the things that I was saying, I think it was Beth yesterday, was that it's quite a balancing act to make sure that you don't stay in an abusive relationship or pattern, and at the same time you don't leave because you don't want to look at your own issues.
Yes, that is a big balancing act. It definitely takes a lot of discernment.
And so, you know, the several different places where I've heard good teachings about this all come down to the idea that if I'm leaving and there's any kind of hostility or fear in the fact of leaving, or I'm feeling guilt about leaving, or I'm feeling angry that I'm having to leave, then there's a lot more work for me to do within myself about that situation and what's gotten stirred up in me.
Right.
It might mean, it's depending upon the situation and how uncomfortable or abusive the interaction is, it might mean that the best thing to do is to leave and then do
right.
The work on myself after I've gotten myself safe or made sure that everybody is as safe as they can be.
Exactly.
But
yeah, if somebody's in a physically abusive situation, it can be perfectly appropriate to say, you know, I'm out of here, and I certainly want to make sure I continue doing my work. Elsewise, I'm just going to be out of that dissociated part of me that I've refused to look at. I'm going to be calling in somebody else to abuse me.
Yeah, and I'd go even further and say it can even be a verbally and emotionally abusive pattern where it's appropriate
yes.
to say, I'm going to end this. But because I'm still upset about it, I have work to do on myself. And ultimately, if I can be in the presence of the person and they're still doing their part of the pattern of interaction and I'm not being triggered, then it's also potentially appropriate to say, okay, this isn't helping me or them to stay in physical proximity or in the relationship.
Well, I have a question to ask you guys, because that's sort of what I meant. You know, and as a child, you can't really leave, usually, if a situation.
Right.
You're calling it abusive. I have called it that. But what I was coming up with from the whole talk about releasing the goal is that I shouldn't really be calling it abusive. I should be viewing it and translating it somehow differently from that.
Well, no, I think that there are cases where there is the fact of abuse. I mean, I worked with a woman a few years back, and her husband would, when he became inebriated and upset, would hold a gun to her head. Literally, physically. Now, I think that's the fact of abuse. And in that situation where, because of the fact of abuse, it's obviously unsafe. She doesn't know when he's going to actually pull a trigger. It's a reasonable thing for her to say, I choose to move away from this situation. So I think when there is the fact of abuse, and of course everybody's got a different standard. Everybody's going to have to say when they choose to say, you know, enough is enough. I'm willing to do my work. My partner isn't, and this is not a safe situation. Or, you know, I also have the right to say this relationship isn't moving to the place where I choose to live. And so I have the right to say if I'm being abused that, you know, it's time for me to let go of that.
Another thing I would add, Carrie, is that a lot of people, as soon as they mention the word abuse, they immediately think there's a perpetrator and there's a victim. And I try to encourage people to get rid of those two words and replace them with participants and experience. So rather than saying, I was a victim of rape, I encourage people to say, I experienced a rape. And it dramatically transforms the images it creates in my mind and the level of empowerment to react differently, to respond to what got stirred up in me and to take responsibility for future interactions with similar people, as opposed to, you know, I even had somebody recently say, well, I was just a victim of circumstances. And so, and they were pretty horrific circumstances, as you describe them. And I just encouraged them to say the same thing, but say, I experienced these circumstances. And it's got a power to it that I encourage you to try out for yourself and see how it shifts your perception of events, because the words we use, what's the phrase, Michael? My words fly up.
My thoughts remain below, yeah. And they direct the quality and the content of my perception.
If I say
I'm a victim, as you're saying, if I say I'm a victim, I have to go to my file on victimhood to build my reality. If I say I'm having an experience, I go to my file on experience and I build a reality. Two totally different processes. One is going to tend to leave me in a place of being disempowered. The other is going to tend to leave me in a place or to lead me to a place where I'm empowered to make changes and to shift rather than to get lost in. If I come from 1,000 generations of victims, you know, my generations know that victims have no power and they're always being abused and they're always going to be abused and they end up getting killed and that's, if they're all the things that I think I know because that's what my generations have experienced, then when I call myself a victim, that's the kind of perception that I tend to lock myself into. Go ahead.
It's making me think I could tell a story about my childhood and say I co-participated with my dad in some very poor communication with very poor communication skills, and we didn't even have the slightest idea how to resolve things together in a loving way. I mean, that might be a way for me to say it instead of my dad was verbally abusive.
Yes.
And it feels a lot better. You know, if I had, and I can see many generations there too, you know.
Well, if you listen to Yeshua, he says the power of life and death is in your words. There are words that bring empowerment and life, and there are words that literally will kill you because it leads you into a certain quality of perception. And if you wouldn't know it by the way the Greeks translated, but when the in the Greek translations where they say the eye is the lamp of the soul, if the light for you is darkness, how deep will your darkness become? What that translates properly is that the perceptual mind is meant to be a guide or a light to guide you through your life, through this, you know, massive game called the world. And then it goes on to say, if the light, if the perception you follow is darkness, that is hostility or fear, how deep will your darkness become? In essence, he was saying, if you want to live a life that's empowered, you've got to keep your lights on. You keep your lights on by the way you use words. You turn the lights out by the way you use words. And if you use words of hostility, fear, darkness, disempowerment, victimhood, then your lights go out. When your lights are out, how deep does your darkness become? What kind of things do we do? What kind of crazy things do we do to destroy ourselves? When we can keep the lights on in the deepest darkness. You know, probably one of the most dramatic experiences I could share is that I used to speak at a particular location in Atlanta quite regularly, and several years back I went to speak at one of their Sunday morning services, the Union of Marietta, up in Marietta, Georgia. And a young woman came up to me before the first service started and said, "Michael, I want to thank you for saving my life." I said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "Well, I was at all of your workshops last year when you were here, and one of the comments that you know, I remember you making often, and oftentimes I would hear your voice in my head, is conscious, active, present love." And then she shared that about 6 months earlier, she had gone home from work, locked herself in her apartment, and found herself locked in her apartment with a man who said he was going to rape her and kill her, held a knife to her throat, and literally stripped her clothes off and began to rape her. And she was in terror. And she said, all of a sudden, she said, "I heard your voice in my head many times. That would have worked up. I heard your voice in my head say, conscious, active, present love." And she said, "It was like something flipped a switch in me." Literally, the switch that was flipped was she shifted from the fear filter in the mind to the love filter in her mind. And all of a sudden, she said, you know, her fear just left. And she looked at this guy, and she said, "As I looked at him after that happened," she said, "all I could see was stark raving terror in his eyes, and I went into total compassion for him." She said, "I knew I was going to be killed. He had a knife at my throat, and I knew he was serious, and I knew he was going to murder me." And she said, "At that moment, it did not matter." And she said, "As soon as I saw that terror in his eyes and went into compassion for him," she said, "he began to cry, and he dropped his knife, got up off of me, and ran out of my apartment." If the light for you is darkness, if she'd stayed in fear, I'd have probably never seen her again because she'd have been dead. Her fear energy definitely maintained. Now, did that mean she called somebody into rape her. I'm not suggesting that. I'm saying that everything that happens to us as creators, there's a part of us that plays into it. When we can get out of the darkness part of us that creates experiences of darkness, and we can step into the light, into the presence of this act of love, then we become different beings. We function differently. And we have a different level and a different quality of power.
You know, based on all of that, I would like to ask one more question. I know there was somebody else on the line, but the trail that we kind of went down and then talking about my childhood, and the question that I had when I started is, I would like to start working into a position where all I'm doing is my own heart work, you know, as opposed to doing jobs for other people. And
right.
I just wonder what, and I know some of my reticence about that, or my, I don't know, I don't want to say failing, but, you know, the lack of the confidence and courage to do that probably goes back to some of that childhood stuff. But I guess my question was, what would you suggest working on to perhaps open up that pathway for myself?
Have you watched the video? I know you've got it, Purpose, Personal Power, Commitment, yet?
It actually was one of the first ones I watched, but it'd probably be a good one to watch again.
Have you completed the Purpose worksheet?
I believe I did it when I watched the video, and it was pretty active in that area. But it probably, like I'm saying, that was, I don't know, month and a half ago or something. Probably be really good for me to do that again. I'm shifting a lot. Daily.
Yeah, I understand. So here would be my suggestion. The completion of that purpose worksheet actually takes 6 months, because what I suggest to people is once they've done the beginning point of it is they put the summation of that purpose exercise, and for anybody that's listening to the show, you can go to the website and download the purpose worksheet, and it's pretty much self-explanatory. The video is also available, but you can pretty much take it just straight from the worksheet, from the website. And So put on a 3x5 card, carry it with you all the time, and every time that you're looking at a behavior, something that you're going to do, then you look at your purpose statement and you make sure that it is on purpose. And what happens over the period of that first 6 months is you undo, by forgiveness, the brainwash. You know, the idea is that our culture teaches us that doing your purpose is not only impossible, it's stupid to even try. Forget it. Go get a job and make money. And so everything that inhibits you from doing that needs to be forgiven, you know, from really living your purpose.
Right.
And so as you undo the brainwash over that period of 6 months, all the parts and pieces of your mind that don't allow you to really fulfill your function here and create such a light that people want to support you in it, then you forgive, you remove those things, and at the end of 6 months, people tend to be in a whole new game doing something totally different.
Cool. I will do that.
Awesome. All right, Carrie. Well, we appreciate you. And anybody who wants to tap into Carrie's work, you can go to carrieellis.com, CarrieElis. She has an awesome book. I was just talking to some folks in Fort Lauderdale the other day who had purchased the book from us a couple of weeks ago, and they were just loving your book on super immunity secrets. So you can buy it on Amazon, but you can also order it from Carrie on her website. So we appreciate it. I think Jeannie had another caller, so I'm going to get back to Jeannie. So, Jeannie, are you with us? Hello, Jeannie. How are you? Well, maybe we're back to some.
Michael, you're breaking up.
Okay, I'm just, I had to move to call Jeannie to get other caller on. 517, you're on the air.
Is that me? That must be me. Hi, Michael.
That must be you. Hey, how do you be?
Good. I had quite a bit come up over the last couple of days, and I was just calling to share a little bit of something that came up last night, having to do with a lot of things, a lot of different things. Just a culmination of stuff. It was actually a pretty simple event, but a lot of profound kind of stuff came up with it. And my son and my wife had gotten in an argument, and they had been out in town and gotten an argument about it was something simple like getting a movie and picking up dinner. And when they came home, they were really, you know, at odds with each other. And we ended up sitting down in the living room. And I've been, you know, wanting to introduce, or not introduce, because both my son and my wife are familiar with the work that I'm doing with the forgiveness work.
Right.
But I really wanted to, you know, to have it be more of a process in our lives together, that we're, so it's not just me going and doing my own worksheets, but we work on it together as a family. And
right.
And anyway, so I sat in the living room with them while they were arguing and sharing their thoughts, and I interjected and you know, helped in the process of them pointing at each other for what was going on inside of them, and, you know, pointed out some things. I forget what worksheet it is. I think it's the codependency worksheet where you,
right,
you have a goal for the other person, not goal, but what advice you would give to the other person.
Your advice for them, right? Yes.
Yeah, and then the advice that the same advice you'd be giving to them, could that advice be given to yourself, or is that, how does it go again?
Well, it's basically just asking yourself how to follow your own advice. I know Dr. Tim, and I presume, Tim, that you have I'm not sure whether we have it on our website, but I presume you have a copy of the article on your website for the professional community that does the energy tap work, about how you've used that tool in your practice with people.
Yes. Yeah, and it's I don't know what made you think of that now, Michael, but yes, I do have links to that on my website.
Well,
just that Tony was saying he was using that particular step. And so your website again, Dr. Tim, is?
CH4CS.com.
CH4CS.com. So you might want to check that out, but yeah, go ahead.
Oh, well, just to make a long story short, so in that process, I ended up, my son actually was just really broke down and started saying a bunch of stuff that I had never heard him say before, but where I've heard it is everything I've been saying in my worksheets for the last 2 weeks. And so, I mean, it was very clear that this is happening, you know, as a reflection of stuff that's been going on inside of me. And then
awesome.
And so I ended up taking my own advice and listening to the advice that I would be giving to them. And anyway, so to make this all come together, my son asked if I would take him back into town to pick up pizza, and I'm eating differently now, so pizza is not very interesting to me. But
right.
Give what you give, you get the original, and the other person gives a carbon copy. So I just decided,
right,
what the heck, I'm going to connect with his enthusiasm, take him into town. It ended up turning into this great thing where we talked about canceling goals, and it's what I've been wanting to have with my son for quite some time now. And
awesome.
It happened just because I decided, you know what, I'll just take you into town and not go into all my reasons why I shouldn't, and that sort of thing. We ended up, the pizza place was closed, so we ended up going to a different place and walking around town and just talking. So it was very cool.
Wonderful. We have less than a minute left.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds like what happened is it opened up a space for you when you set your goal for him to do it perfectly or do it your way or do it mom's way. And always when there's conflict, when we can do that, it opens a space for something different. So I'd like to have you sharing that because it inspires everybody. And we're glad to have you all with us, and we appreciate you, Dr. Tim. And we will be starting our intensive season at Heartland July 12th, Food, Fun, Forgiveness, and then into a couple of intensives. You can check out the website. Bring a stranger with you to show tomorrow, and hopefully we've got this technology all handled, so we'll be here tomorrow at 1 o'clock with you. Blessings and much appreciation. Take care. Bye-bye.